This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
A week of claret and blue went from boo-hoo to woo-hoo as Chelsea triumphed over Aston Villa on Wednesday to banish West Ham Wolves. There we go. What a start. I'm going to carry on.
They say you put no work into this show.
Wow. I tell you what, gents. I tell you what, you banished those West Ham woes from last week. I'm going to finish this because I started it. Back
Yeehaw
to winning ways
to
and back with Tammy on top. Mr. Abraham, of course, returning to the side and bagging his 11th of the season before Mason Mount nabbed the winner to see the Blues comfortably nestled in those top four spots. This is the Chelsea Fan Show. Of course, it could be no other with me, Matt Beadle, and the boys from the Chelsea Fancast. Stamford Chidge.
Hello.
Jonathan Kidd.
Guido.
And Clayton Bierman.
Hello.
Gents, great to have you on. But before we get into all that aforementioned football action, there has been some monumental news in the world of Chelsea FC this afternoon.
Jonathan's drinking something that's deeply unpleasant looking. Is that the big news you're thinking
of? Oh, wow. What on earth is that?
I'm not telling you.
Some sort of red-based drink. Interesting. Okay.
He's probably drinking somebody's blood.
But gents, it feels like a weight. Not so much a weight, but that a ban has been lifted.
A ban has been lifted from our shoulders.
I have to say I'm very cross because I wrote the running order yesterday and I had to change it before I left today to include the transfer ban and Marco Silva being sacked and all this rubbish. But I don't know where I stand.
The latter was inevitable and the rumour was that it was all very likely the ban would be lifted.
Only if you listen to your sources.
Well, I do.
You know, your HP sources.
Also the fact that Buck made that statement about, you know, all there being zillions, it was leading that way, wasn't he? He obviously had a very good, appeal, didn't they?
So, did you see the statement that Chelsea released today?
No.
Interesting. I've only just read it, actually.
I was going to bring it up.
I'd like to know all about it.
So basically, the club, I mean, Chidge?
Well, they stuck the boot into FIFA.
Absolutely.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, basically they... I mean, I could bring it up, but I won't. I can paraphrase it because basically they said that if FIFA don't, you know, treat every case, you know, fairly on the same basis, then it's making a mockery of their system and their regulations because they basically had a dig at them
for
treating
City.
Them. Yeah, absolutely, for treating them differently to the way they treated City, and that there were discrepancies between all sorts of different regulations. They really hammered them, didn't they, Matt?
They did, absolutely. And I think it makes sense because City were found to have broken rules, right, on signing young players, which is where this ban came from.
Exactly.
And the Court of Arbitration for Sport, I think that, you know, the questions have to be asked as to why City did not get
a
ban.
They got a fine, didn't they?
They got a fine.
Weren't they saying that they fessed up quicker than we did? And that was sort of taken into consideration, the fact that they admitted it, whereas we actually fought it. But ultimately, we were playing on a different playing field because the whole thing with the bans against Atletico Madrid and Barcelona, they were given a window to stock up before their ban came in.
They hammered us, didn't
they? Which we didn't get. And then there was a disparity between us and Man City. So...
However, you were able to sign Pulisic, and there was a loophole with Mateo Kovacic as well.
I don't think there were loopholes.
Not a loophole.
He was already on loan.
Yeah,
and we bought Pulisic the year before, so the season before.
So I think he was on a loan contract with an option to buy, so that contract was already in existence. Yeah. So that's why. It wasn't caught, and Pulisic was bought in December when they obviously got the nod that they were going to get.
But the reality is, you know, whatever the, you know, I mean, Cass have sided with us against FIFA here. Mm. So that should tell you everything you need to know. I mean, they're impartial. But it now appears that we can buy players in January, and I'm not, I'm feeling really. I mean, we talked. Funny enough, we were prescient on Monday, weren't we? Because we did talk about
what
this a little bit.
Word, isn't it?
Yes, very thank good, you very much. Yeah. Yes, are you omnipresent?
And now it's just that drink.
Prescient.
I think.
Prescient. I like it. I like your. That's good. But regardless,
I'm hoping for many prescients at Christmas.
If you went to public school, you would say prescient.
Yes, you would. Can I say
and
it
I
like
didn't,
that then?
So I went prescient.
Prescient.
Okay, so bottom line is we can now buy players. And I'm as you know, a bit conflicted about this.
Yeah, because I think we all are.
Well, I wondered if we would be.
Yeah.
Because I think it's kind of borderline naive to assume you don't need to strengthen your squad or buy. I was having a really interesting chat with John, your Leeds man, who's coming in after us. He's a very good guy, actually. I was explaining the situation to him and say, I wonder how the club will view it, because I think that really there's only one place in the top four up for grabs, and that's fourth spot, because I'm pretty sure City, Liverpool and Leicester have got the other three places sewn up. And we are currently in fourth. But if the kids go on a bit of a dip of form in the new year, which they might, or we get a few injuries that we can't ride out, Tammy, for example, which could happen... I mean, surely the club will want to get into the Champions League again next year. We'll do too, surely.
I think we could use the West Ham game as an example of how there was there isn't a great deal of depth in the squad.
Not up front anyway. But, you know, because I know it sounds a bit churlish because our expectations were set so much lower at the beginning of the season. But having got as far as we've got and done so well, to miss out for want of... strengthening the depth in the squad in January, I think would be a bit foolish. Although I don't want it to bedblock any of the youngsters coming through.
I think, as I said at the very beginning of the season, that if we happen to get through the group stage of the Champions League and have the ban rescinded, we'd be in a perfect position to strengthen the squad. Get up, they can get a couple of marquee players if this happened to be the case.
You can buy, they're not cup tied anymore, apparently, because I said this on a show the other week and some lad tweeted me and said, that stopped a couple of years ago.
Apparently. So you could buy whoever you wanted to come.
I mean, I don't know the veracity.
They'd be much stronger for the Champions League.
But now
we've got this real dilemma. And it's like you said, because you take this season and it was a growing season. It was a. You know, let's see what we can do with what we've got season. And the expectations were sort of fairly middling to low. Mm. And then we had this great start to the season and we're in a really good position. And one, you don't want to spoil the equilibrium. Two, you don't want to block the youth coming through. But three, are we now saying that we have to get fourth? You know, because that's what you're implying.
No,
you're
I'm not saying that. I didn't say that. But I'm saying, look, if we've got this close, if we've got a sniff of it, it would be a real shame to not achieve it through want of, you know, being able to strengthen the squad. Because if you just to reel back a second, Clayton, because of course at the beginning of the season we went into it on the assumption that we wouldn't be able to buy any players. In that case, well, therefore our expectations are lower. Now that has changed, as have our expectations, as have how well we've performed. So why not?
I sort of, because what would you be saying if we were mid-table? If we were where we thought we were going to be?
Wait till the summer.
Exactly. So I think it's quite difficult. I mean, I'd be quite interested. I mean, there's a lot of talk about Sancho, and I don't know whether we need Sancho. I mean, Sancho's a great player, but whether he fits in with what we're trying to do, I don't know.
Made up. Rubbish.
No, I don't think so.
What does Ron say?
Ron says exactly what I've
said. He makes his made up.
Yeah. Mm.
But I think that the whole fact of the friendship with Tammy and Ruben, whatever, I think they're, you know, if he's going to leave, then it seems like a good place for him to come. But I think the most important thing, and we've talked about this even before the transfer ban, is we have to stop buying Zappacostas and drink waters. Mm. You know, if we've got this
ban,
go out and buy Koulibaly.
It needs to be a top player. It's supposed to be Dembele. Dembele is apparently on the radar.
These kids have proved that we've got the squad. Yeah. We don't need squad players. We need marquee signings now.
Well, I'd say world-class players. Yeah,
I don't think that January is the time to do it.
Well, I'm agreed with that
to a degree. I mean, the Sancho thing, we could do what we did with Pulisic.
Yeah.
I think we could go out, we could buy him and then park him.
Yeah. What about Zaha being apparently on the radar?
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? I really don't know. I mean, can he play a number nine? Can he play down the middle?
Is there any fear here, gents, and I could be way off the mark here, but is there any fear that this, and you alluded to this, Chidge, that this has slightly affected the illusion of what this season was going to be, in the sense that Chelsea were going to create this new identity with these youngsters coming through and you weren't going to have to spend any money, and now that it almost seems, because this transfer ban has been lifted, that it's almost a case of we must sign? Do you think Frank will feel like that he has to sign one because the transfer ban's been
well,
lifted?
Well, who knows? I mean, there are so many imponderables at the moment. One is how much Frank really does want to buy some new players and or protect the youngsters in the squad. How much of the club, you know, desperate to spend some money having, you know, because we know that from the last few years, their policy actually without a transfer ban has been one in, one out, no over 30s. So how do we, you know, do we know that that's changed? Also, do we think that they, you know, have they learned from their mistakes? You know, buying players on a whim from a manager like Conte or Sarri and then ending up with a Drinkwater or Zappacosta, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we don't know what's changed. One hopes that they've learned from these lessons.
One thing that has changed is we got a director of football who's actually got a brain in his head.
Who's that?
Petr Cech.
He's not a director of football, mate.
Well, he's sort of... All right, he's not a director of football.
What is his role?
But I was reading that he is involved in talking about bringing players in with Marina.
As is Scott McLachlan, as is Marina, as is Roman, inevitably, and Frank.
Of course.
There's a whole team of them, but Petr Cech ain't no traditional director of football. He's not in the role that we would commonly...
No, but if you were sitting down with Michael Emanalo or sitting down with Petr Cech and talking about players...
I think Michael Emanalo was more of a director of football than Petr Cech, what I understand. I don't think Petr Cech's role predominantly that.
All right. I stand corrected.
From what I tell, my sources tell me, and they ain't Big Ron, all right?
Yeah. The thing with, and this is the issue with these roles now within clubs, right? So as I understand it, Petr Cech came in as almost a buffer for between player and board relations, in a sense, right? Helps them understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah, more or less. Mm. I think it's around that kind of thing. But it's not the traditional role of a director of football. The director of football basically, you know, runs the footballing side of that club, you know, and that's the lot. Manager reports into them effectively.
Yeah, but Frank would never have accepted that. Petr
Cech was well. Who knows? We don't know Petr Cech was in place A before Frank turned up, and B, he's not the director of football. There's only one director of football at Chelsea.
And that's Roman
Marina.
Roman Abramovich. That's the point. I mean, going back to what you were saying, Clayton. If you want Chelsea to compete for Premier League titles and Champions League titles, which we do, in the full knowledge that we know we probably won't be able to this year, I would say we are, you know, the area in which we are lacking is two or three experienced world-class players. Because last year we had two world-class players. We had Kante and we had Hazard. This year we have one definite world-class player in Kante. Arguably, Jorginho is getting close. But
as is Kovacic.
Well, yeah, close, but they're not there yet, I don't think.
No.
Because you've got to do it season in, season out.
Yeah.
So we are short there. So I think if we are going to buy anywhere, and this is why I would agree with you that I think waiting until the summer makes far more sense.
Unless somebody's available.
Yeah, but or can be squeezed out, which is something like Chilwell's talked about. Leicester are not going to let Chilwell go in January. They'd be insane to do that.
Madness.
So, you know, go after two or three world-class players in the positions that we need to strengthen, stroke, replace. We know left-back is one. Mm. We know Willian can't go on forever, although you could argue that we've got his replacement in Hudson-Odoi, but Pedro's going to go too.
So is Giroud.
There's an argument for a centre-back, possibly. I mean, you know, there are arguments all over the pitch, really, but what I really, really, really don't want to see is, one, having the boat rocked in terms of the morale of the kids, and I don't want them to be bed-blocked, because it'll just mean that this has been for nothing this year.
The one area that you could definitely say that you're not blocking any kids is up front, because there is nothing up front.
But if you get a world-class striker, how's Tammy going to get in?
No, but I don't...
Who else is going to sit on the bench to Tammy, then?
I mean, I don't think... Yeah, I mean, who are you looking at? I mean, the one that I think is quite interesting is it Timo Werner?
Timo Werner, yeah.
I think he's quite interesting, and he's got a 20 million buyout clause, and he's very good. And he's quite young, so you wouldn't actually expect him to be
walking straight in. And nor would he.
And the same you could say about Haaland as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know whether he's sort of wedded to go to Manchester United.
Isn't he a bit old now? And how's his knee after Roy Keane?
It's getting better.
Well, the thing with Haaland,
the plaster's off. Yeah.
The thing with Haaland is that it's not. Listen, it's one of those where Manchester United appear to be the front runners, but you don't know. Werner as well. Apparently, Manchester United interested in him. He's got a good relationship with Jurgen Klopp, so that's a potential option. I think whatever happens, he'll probably end up in the Premier League. But it wouldn't surprise me as well if Bayern Munich came in with an 11th-hour swoop for someone like Timo Werner. Of course, having a very good season for both club and country as well after the poor 2018 showing from him in the World Cup. Great discussion, fellas. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Great start to the show on this, the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge, Clayton Bierman and Jonathan Kidd.
Kiddo.
Back-to-back defeats, fellas. Returned with a win against Villa, of course, in the week. 2-1 goals from Tammy Abraham. Another one from Mason Mount as well. That's 11 for the season for Tammy. He is getting better and better and better. However, I would like to just bring up one small thing that irked me. Not celebrating.
Oh, yes. I'm not a fan of that at all.
I thought, apart from VAR killing goal celebrations generally, first I thought, oh, he's not celebrating because he thinks he's offside. And then I realised why he wasn't celebrating. And I actually wondered whether if he'd scored that goal down the other end, whether he would have celebrated. Yes. It's the fact he was actually standing in front of them. But no, I
then why didn't he turn around and bow to them? Or wave at them or something?
Jimmy did when he apologised for scoring.
He should have given them the you-know-what and dropped his shorts and made an absolute... that's a football
and
I like.
And then be sent off.
None of this respect rub. Well, remember Mike Summerby used to do that quite frequently. He used to drop his shorts at opposition fans.
Yes, I think the law
other hand gestures.
Yes, abusive. But no,
they don't work on radio so well, but you know what I'm talking about.
It was very strange.
I don't know whether we've had this conversation on the show before, but yes, he was brilliant for Villa last season. Yes, he might have a little affinity with the club, but
he was on loan for a year.
Exactly, and his employers have always been Chelsea.
So they were paying him.
Exactly, and the argument is, you don't want to show disrespect to your former not really employers, but you're actually disrespecting your current employers by not celebrating.
Do you know what? If it had been me, I'd have been, apart from dropping my shorts and, you know, issuing all sorts of hand gestures, I'd be pointing at the badge, pointing at them again, and go, hey, you're laughing. Let's see.
Yeah, but you'd have undone all the... affection that he created in the year that he was there.
I'd have caused a riot, mate. Yeah. But anyway, that's me. Yeah.
Can I just make a point very briefly about the referee? I'm sorry to be tedious about this. New guy I'd never heard of called Chris Cavanagh.
No, I've heard of him.
But anyway, it was like watching somebody doing a Sunday league game. Yeah. He spent nearly all of the time in the centre circle, running the diagonal and paying no attention. He couldn't. The linesmen were making no decisions. That's why he was so dreadful. He was making decisions from 35 yards away from what was going on. Was absolutely dreadful.
Can I say something in his defence?
Yeah, go on then. What would it be? He was wearing a nice pair of shorts.
He had a nice cerise shirt. Yeah.
The fact that he wasn't blowing up every single time anybody got touched. He was actually but I actually think he tried to keep the game going because there were occasions when our guys were pushed off and their guys were pushed off and he waved play on. And I think we've forgotten, because football is just such a non-contact sport now, we've forgotten what it's like to actually just wave play
on. So there was
on.
That wonderful moment where one of their players thought he was fouled and got up and then kicked Willian and he just gave him a talking
McGinn.
To. Yeah, and Willian was almost...
Should have been a yellow card.
Of course
I cannot believe it wasn't.
Of course it should. And he
just Jack Grealish just pushing gave him a whoever he pushed. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember, Kovacic,
and,
wasn't
and
it?
The constant battle between Grealish and Willian, which was actually quite funny.
And Kante,
quite
actually.
Funny in the
Kante
end.
Kante did foul Grealish
they,
quite a lot.
They appeared not to ever have a conversation. All they did was mime to each other.
He's the most fouled player in the Premier League.
He's the foulest player in the Premier League, I believe.
I think
you're Grealish, just a Mason Mount.
Quickly, I think Grealish is a very good player.
Yeah, he's just I agree.
Very,
Mason
very
Mount,
good. Those curling crosses, he's very good Beckham-like. Player, yeah. Very good. I'm
very
really
good
impressed
player.
With him. It's interesting, you know. So. Yeah.
It is indeed. We're going to get back on to this discussion in a moment, chaps, but we've got Ben, a caller on the line now, wants to talk the transfer ban and potential signings. Hello, Ben.
Hello, guys. You all right?
Yeah, hello, Ben.
Good
you all right?
Good to have you on, Ben.
What would you like to talk about, Ben?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, just the transfer ban, really. And to actually also to say how great it is to speak to Chiz and Jonathan, and of course, Clayton.
Lovely. Thanks,
you know, mate. Mate, it's a fiver I owe you.
Yeah, I need to get my my backside in gear, really, and get up to the bridge a bit more often. It's been far too long, so I'll finally meet you guys.
Lovely. That'd be great.
Absolutely. I just kind of wanted to touch on the transfer ban being lifted, and now it could be a bit of a double-edged sword. Mm. You guys were talking about the positions potentially who we need to replace, like Chilwell, Sancho being mentioned. I'm going to throw this one out there, and Clayton, I know you're a fan of Kepa, and it's not that I'm not a fan of Kepa.
Here it comes.
But I think potentially we need someone to galvanise him. Give him a bit of a kick up the backside.
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think they'll buy somebody who isn't a top player, but they'll buy somebody who's like somebody who will just put pressure on him.
Like a Heaton.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Nick somebody
Pope.
Of that
Nick
ilk.
Pope,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Ben Foster, even.
The Ajax keeper.
Yeah.
The Ajax keeper.
Onana.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, he might want to play for a big club.
Yeah, even the Valencia keeper was great the other night.
Well, it's just a very good question, actually. And have you got Ben on the line? And it kind of fits in with what we were talking about. Because I'd put this in the running order, Ben, because I walked... Well, I wasn't actually at the game on Wednesday because I had to work. Ooh. Had to work in Southampton. But I watched the television. I went away from there. And I said to my... I actually did mutter this to myself, as I am wont to do.
Yeah.
Why is it that all opposition goalkeepers turn into flaming Gordon Banks when they play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, Ben? What is all that about?
Quite.
Heaton was fantastic, wasn't he?
No, Heaton is very fantastic. He's a very good goalkeeper.
Very good.
I was asking
then
Ben.
But then you make the... Why isn't he there for... Kepa isn't this of the same ilk, is he? He's not good enough in comparison with Heaton.
Ben, what do you think?
I've been given a dirty look, by the way.
I do like Kepa. I do. I just think with the fee, yes, but with the £71 million fee over his head, I think time will tell if he's going to be worth that amount. I mean, I didn't want this kind of call to just turn in all about Kepa, but you know, this being the season of patience, it'll be unfair to me to be understanding of say Tammy, for example. Mm. You know, not scoring for a couple of games, and then for me to kind of really hound Kepa.
And he made a great save at the end of the Villa game.
Yeah.
Oh, did he?
He did.
it was a very good save. And actually, but
it was straight at him, though, wasn't it?
It was a good save from Douglas Luiz, absolutely.
It was a good save.
And it would have been a terribly undeserved draw had that gone in. Yeah. But I think, as well, Ben, the key thing here is that you look at a lot of the top clubs now in the Premier League, they all have three, I'm not going to say world-class goalkeepers, but three solid goalkeepers. And Chelsea just don't have that this season.
What's wrong with Big Willie Caballero,
sure,
mate?
But that's two.
Argentina goalkeeper,
that's two.
Where would you like me to start?
Prone to one absolute major error per game.
Okay, well, Ben, we'll shift it along.
Ben, who would you like us to sign?
Realistically, looking at January, I would probably give a shout out to Nick Pope. I think he's a realistic target. I'm not saying he's, you know, a really world-class player, but I think he's the right side of 30. And I think he could step in if needs be, because with the greatest respect to Caballero, we all know who's number one between those two. You know, as good as what, you know, Woody has been for us in the past and stuff, we all know who's number one. We wait till the summer, even though he will cost an absolute arm and a leg, maybe Donnarumma from AC Milan. Mm. Very, very young keeper, very, very promising. But, you know, Kepa might come good, and I really, really hope he does, because it's not like I dislike him, there's just moments where I'm just like, oh, no, don't do that, and then his positioning could be better, you know, and Chid, I think you've said there has been an element of smoke hand.
That's Tony. That's Tony one of Tony's. Cover. Yeah, Tony's with the smoke hands. Yeah. I think
that penalty save was very smoke handed, wasn't it?
Oh, Clayton! Clayton's upset, Ben. Clayton, I'd say Ben. I would say, you know, he's not perfect by any means. Worry about some of his saves where his you know, wrists do look a bit weak. I tell you what I worry most about. I worry about the fact that I don't think he imposes himself on the penalty area like I expect and hope a keeper would do.
Yeah,
but I think he's young. He's what, 22, 23?
Yeah. That's like older, I think.
25,
20. Is he really? God, yeah. Blimey! So he's older than I thought.
Yeah,
but that's still young. Change. That's still young in goalkeeper terms, you know. But I mean, Matt does a goalkeeper podcast with a very good goalkeeper in Richard Lee in his day. What do you two think about the situation?
Kepa has come up many, many times.
Yeah,
I think with regards to commanding his box, that's the issue with that. David De Gea is very much the same in the sense that he doesn't come for anything, De Gea. If you watch him in 90 minutes, he barely comes for anything, and that's because he backs himself. He backs himself to stop anything that comes his way, and I think Kepa is the same with that.
He is.
Kepa is slightly culpable of the arm swing that we're seeing now with a lot of goalkeepers now. They call it like the ski arms, where they have their arms backwards to really try and gain some momentum, but sometimes you haven't got the speed and the agility that can affect you when you dive. I think, Ben, just to finish on what you're saying about Nick Pope, I think the issue here is that he's the closest now than he's probably ever been to dislodging Jordan Pickford as England's number one. And if he goes to Chelsea and isn't a guaranteed starter ahead of the Euros next summer, he won't be England's number one. And I think he's really got ambitions of making that spot his own. So I think to go out for Nick Pope, whilst it would be a great acquisition, would be very difficult in January.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think anyone's going to be difficult in January. I mean, I would absolutely love us to sign Ben Chilwell, but we're not going to get him in January. Yeah. It's a difficult time. I mean, I didn't want the transfer ban to be lifted. I wanted us to wait till the summer, you know, and just kind of shake all the cobwebs, kind of get a squad together, get a core together, and then reapproach it. As you know, as Chidge has said, you know, sign a couple of, you know, world-class players, put them in there, and not to kind of compromise the youth coming through, because it's this season, not because we're winning trophies or because we're going to be up there like we have done in the past, but it's been one of the best seasons in my lifetime as a Chelsea fan, just because of the pure feel-good factor of it. It's been
the joy involved has been fantastic, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
And Jonathan, I wanted to say, actually, I was watching Flushed Away with my son earlier, and I know you're barnacle, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, thank you. I think I've got one line as barnacle, I think. Yeah. In fact,
and
I wasn't cast
Dumbledore
in it.
Or is it Hagrid in the Harry Potter games?
Hagrid,
right,
yeah, on the games. Yeah,
well,
I am, exactly. All of them, all the games. And a variety of other characters. Yeah, like portraits and what are those? The Death Eaters. I'm a Death Eater.
Yeah, yeah.
Potter, put down that wand.
Ben, a great end to this call. Thank you very
much
for joining us on the Chelsea Fan Show.
Cheers.
Well done.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport, like no other fan show you will ever listen to.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd and Clayton Bierman. Yeah. Before we spoke to Ben there, great call, by the way. If you want to get in touch as well, very easy to do so, 0208 70 20 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Now, we were reflecting on the game with Villa. I don't think we finished that just yet before we move on to the game with Everton, of course, at the weekend. And a bit of background noise as well, just to add to the show. Nothing wrong with that or whatsoever.
It was Chidge.
We were reflecting on that game. And something I was going to bring up, fellas, was the fact that Villa, this season, gave Spurs a game. They gave Arsenal a game. They gave Liverpool a game, of course. And they gave United a game, of course, just 2-2 recently. Did not give Chelsea a game. It was a convincing victory.
Very convincing. We should have been 5, though. Their inability to score is Chelsea's big problem at the moment when they're all over them. I mean, it happened against West Ham. West Ham gained strength from the fact that after the first 20 minutes, it was still 0-0. And I think it's that is the main Chelsea problem. They are so excellent going forward. This is why I keep predicting they'll score 4. They should have scored 4 in that game against Villa. They should have scored 4 against West Ham. But because they didn't, the opposition then, whether they run out of energy, we were talking about this, whether it's the first 20 minutes, whether it's the same thing that Klopp had when he first managed Liverpool, or even Guardiola with Man City, is they're so galvanised to getting the ideas across and they're so fantastic at attacking that there has to be a period where they're a bit knackered, basically, and they just sit
back
a little bit.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Villa game, I mean, when they scored, they'd done nothing in the first half.
Absolutely
nothing. And it was an atrocious goal to give away. Yeah, it was just awful.
And a terrible goal itself was awful. I mean, the fact that he bumbled that over the line.
We've let in some rubbish this season.
Centre though, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. He won the ball in midfield.
Oh, that's right.
And he sort of put it out to the wing.
It wasn't Trezeguet. Sorry, El Mahamedi.
The thing was, Grealish in the second half of the first half really took hold of midfield and was playing very well. But that was a dreadful goal to give away.
It was, yeah. There'd been no shots at all.
But then we scored a fantastic goal.
That's the same
goal.
With West Ham. There'd been no shots at all. It was a fantastic goal. And then in the second half, for 25 minutes, they absolutely hammered them.
Yeah. But you have to say that Villa defended really
well. No, and also Heaton had an absolute...
He made a couple of really good saves. The save
from Willian was completely brilliant.
That free kick.
Free kick was great.
He was, wasn't he?
I thought Willian had a fantastic...
He did. I mean, but there was a spell, wasn't there? 20 minutes in the second half. Yeah. The football we played was scintillating.
Absolutely scintillating. And I don't think anybody would be able to deal with that.
Apart from not putting the ball in the flaming net.
That's always the case, though.
Why is it worse with Giroud playing?
That was the thing.
What are we attributing this to then? Because Tammy Abraham's got 11 goals this season. Well, Matt, we should have more.
I think this is an excellent question, and I've been pondering this, bizarrely enough, all day and yesterday, because it makes no sense, does it? We've got a guy who's the second highest scorer in the league. He scored more goals than Aguero and Harry Kane. We've got Mount and Pulisic, who together, I think, have scored more goals than Eden Hazard had at this stage of the season, and we were a one-man team last year. So we've got players who not only can score, but are scoring. There are other players in the team who have also scored. But the absolute barefaced reality is, I mean, this is a stat that we talked about, I think, last week, or I've talked about before. We're 17th in the Premier League for... the ratio of goals to chances created. We do not convert our chances. It takes an awful lot of chances for us to score. So, yeah, on pro rata, we do create a lot of chances. But, hey, the point that I'm desperately trying to make is that this is not a new phenomenon. We were like this last year. We hit the woodwork more than any other team in the league, which you can either say is bad luck or bad finishing. We were like it the year before. I mean, when was the last time that you would say... that we would create very few chances but score a very high percentage of them?
2005.
Well, I was thinking a bit more recently, when Mourinho last won the league. Yeah.
I would say that was our best, but I don't think
you can compare last year to this year, because I think the build-up was so much more ponderous.
Well, you can on that particular stat of not putting chances away, mate.
What's the ratio with shots? Because I think we've got a larger number of shots. I don't know, but I'm going to do some work on it.
But I think the point is valid. Sorry, I'm just going to throw something out there.
Because, the football was scintillating. 25 minutes after we scored, fantastic football.
Yeah, it was.
And if you actually boil it down to how many saves Heaton had to make in that period of time, there were loads of blocks and a lot of the time that Pulisic gets into the box.
Yeah. Which he does better and better, one too many touches before shooting.
Yeah. I know I'm not trying to criticise him, but I just think it's factual.
Yeah.
And I don't actually think Mason Mount missed a good chance. Tammy Abraham's missed a good chance.
Yeah.
But when you think about the saves that Heaton made, he made one save. I can't remember who it was from, but it was over to his right-hand side. And then he made the great save from Willian's free kick.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual shot. So yes, we're creating enormous amount of pressure, but I don't think in terms of clear-cut chances. You can't look at that game and say, well, we missed number of chances.
These are the best stats that you can get off the flash scores.
Read that on.
25 goal attempts, mm-hmm. 8-9 shots on goal, 6 shots off goal, 10 blocked shots.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is the thing. A lot of them are on target, a lot of them on block. And this is why I find it really hard to figure it out. Are we just inherently unlucky? I mean, is it just, as I said earlier on, that goalkeepers turn into Gordon Banks when they play us? Because the number of times we've seen goalkeepers... I mean, that wasn't just a joke.
But I think the corners are really, really important.
They're appalling.
And they're appalling.
But they're not shots. This is my point. They're not chances, are they?
The pressure involved with creating a corner with other teams, even... Villa had a corner that they almost scored from, and West Ham
we had 9
had two corners in the second half, which Kepa saved from a bullet header. And that was all that they had. We seem to be... It's that thing of the momentum created by getting a corner. You think, well, it's going to put even more pressure on the team defending, and we play a rather ridiculous balloon thing to the far but post.
Goalkeeper made seven
hit
saves.
Hit the first man. Yeah. But I think it's part of it. I think if the tension was there with the corner being good, we might then score from the ball coming out.
It still didn't stop us creating a handful of chances.
But they do. It's wonderful. That is what makes it such it's scintillating football.
But if you think about it, Villa defended brilliantly, but you have to think that getting a third goal, then more would have followed. I know that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but once you get the third goal, their heads would have gone down.
Game
and then
over.
Then you basically you get
Whereas
more goals.
We sat there going, I was absolutely tense for the last 20 minutes.
You're expecting them to equalise.
Yeah. But you know what? Here's the thing. You know, because
as with Valencia,
it was slightly the two halves were slightly different. I felt. I remember writing because when I'm watching it at home on the telly, I do make notes, and I remember my final note for the first half was: we need to work the goalkeeper harder, because we weren't. We weren't working him hard at all. We were creating chances, but
That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, but exactly. But second half, we did. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Frank obviously told
me. We upped it. Upped the intensity, didn't we?
Absolutely.
But it's just really weird. I think the point I was really making was that this is not a new phenomenon. I seem to think this has been going on for quite a while. And I would love... I'm not a professional footballer. I have no answer. I do not know why. If only we had one at Love Sport that I could ask this minute. You know, phone in. Well, you know who you are.
Well, you do have knowledge, Gigi.
Yeah, but I don't. I can't answer this question. It's my head in. This is the point.
Despite all of that, he does have, Tammy Abraham, 11 goals in 14 appearances. Who are the other two players who have scored more in the Premier League for Chelsea in their first 14 games? Two players.
Oh, that's a good question.
Bobby Tambling.
Premier League.
Oh. Because the football didn't exist before 1992. Right. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank?
Nope.
It's not Drogba?
Nope.
Diego Costa's got to be.
Yep, 12 in 2014, 15.
Hazard.
No. A bit further back.
Ida?
No.
Ooh, Viali?
It's not, I'm afraid. He's French.
Oh.
He also played for another London club.
Giroud?
No.
Well, this is embarrassing that we can't remember.
Yeah, French?
Signed from Bolton.
Signed from Bolton?
Good Johnson.
Ida? He said Ida.
I said Ida.
No, not Ida.
No, and Ida's not French.
So oh, Anelka.
Anelka. Anelka. Oh, God blimey, love a duck. Fancy forgetting St. Nick. I'm so sorry.
Not a problem at all.
Class act, Anelka.
Yeah, a very, very good player.
Well, good, wasn't he? Player.
Of course. He also played for Liverpool. And, of course, you travelled
to City.
Merseyside.
And Arsenal.
City, yes.
And Arsenal.
Yeah, many,
Anelka
many other
was
clubs.
The one that basically was the... His penalty, which was very dubious, was the in the only game that we lost in 2008.
Manchester City, yeah.
Early.
Man City, yeah.
Yeah, Man City away.
No, I thought it meant the penalty that he missed in the Champions
League.
No. Final.
When he was playing against us for City.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mourinho's first season, I think. Anyway.
It was. I'm going to go back to the segue that I was just about to attempt.
It was a brilliant segue, completely ignored by everybody. But
sorry,
do
Matt.
Do it again.
Sorry.
Do it again.
Sorry.
Go on.
Sorry. He also played for Liverpool, based in Merseyside, of course, which is where Chelsea travel tomorrow on their away day.
Can
we
go to Merseyside?
You can indeed. We're going to be talking all about that in a moment.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast. Of course, Chelsea travelling to Everton tomorrow, who have been pretty poor recently. Of course, Marco Silva has been sacked. Duncan Ferguson in temporary charge, which Gigi finds hilarious. Were you laughing or
sneezing? No. I'm just...
No, they're going to turn into Brazil 70 tomorrow.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a given.
Well, interestingly, even though they've been poor, they've been decent against top six at Goodison, to be fair. Lost only one of their last six Premier League home matches against the established top six, as we should say. 1-3, drawn 2. It was only City that beat them in September. On the line now, delighted to say, we have Paul McParland, senior writer and Everton correspondent for the brilliant These Football Times. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing fine, Matt. How are you yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How do you see this game going tomorrow?
I think it's a different prospect than what it would have been if Marco Silva had still been in charge. So I think I'd have been quite pessimistic about Everton's prospects if that had been the case. because I think the whole club and the fan base has just been given a massive lift by A, Silver departing, and also B, Duncan Ferguson, who, you know, in terms of legendary status, probably compares to Chelsea's Frank Lampard, Bobby Tamlin, players like that.
Really?
Undoubtedly, yes.
Well, so will there be lots of long balls with everybody just attempting to get on the end of it then?
I mean, listen... But mate, I love Big Dunk, as you know, because I spoke to you on a breakfast show the other week, and I thought you were going to hire Big Dunk before the Liverpool game, and we talked about the prospect of Big Dunk chinning Jurgen Klopp, which was filling me with glee.
I like that prospect.
Exactly, but I've got to say, I mean, Frank Lampard is the record Chelsea goal scorer, played for England 114 times or something. I mean, Dunk was great for Everton, but I don't think he's as a. I mean, you know, Andy Gray's a bigger legend at Everton, surely, or somebody like Graham Sharp, possibly. I mean, seriously?
I think it depends on what generation you're from. I mean, I know certainly for Everton fans under the age of 40, Duncan Ferguson is the one they always refer to as being the legend. I mean, obviously, I'm old now, and I do remember, you know, some of the legends that you mentioned there, such as Gray, such as Andy Gray, Graham Sharp, people like that. But
Alex Young for me.
the golden vision.
Howard Kendall, I thought you were going to say, mate.
I don't think it's Bob Latchford.
Brian Lebone, he really means as well. That's one of Jonathan's favourites, I would have thought. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Anyway, we digress. Carry on.
Yeah, so you mentioned about you know, his status. I think it mainly comes down to the fact that in the mid-90s, when Everton were undergoing a really desperate period, Duncan Ferguson was kind of the shining light that kept fans going. I mean, I think I mentioned today, last Sunday, in his first spell as a player with Everton, he never lost the game against Liverpool. He often scored in derby games against Liverpool. So purely on that basis alone, and given where we are in terms of the derby stats at the moment, that's why amongst a large section of supporters, he does have this legendary status. Yeah. And also,
Talismanic, really, to an extent. They look at him and just see, wow, he's going to do something. Chidge wants to say something.
Well, I was going to say, the great thing is, if you're a Chelsea supporter, is that he's not playing on Saturday. you know, to be honest, mate, if he was playing, I'd probably be even more worried. But let's be really honest here. Let's talk brass tacks. I mean, I know Dunk's gone up to Everton to do his coaching badges, and I know from what I understand that he's absolutely champing at the bit to have a crack at this. Yeah. I also know that, knowing Big Dunk, that he will scare the bejesus out of all of the Everton players. And frankly, they've been playing like they needed a rocket up their you-know-what.
Yeah.
Will that be enough to beat a Chelsea side who at the moment playing pretty well? West Ham last week was a blip. That was much more like the real deal against Villa in the midweek. And they're much better away from home because, you know, they get... I don't know. I think it just suits the way they play a lot more. So do you think that will be enough to you know, really, to frankly pull off a bit of a surprise tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, yourself, you know, from supporting Chelsea, the difference the atmosphere in the ground can make to all the team's performance.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, if Silver being still been in charge tomorrow, the atmosphere would have been, you know, quite depressing and working in Chelsea's favour. I just think tomorrow, the fact that Ferguson, you know, is being appointed, the fact he's got his four children still season ticket holders in the Gladstone's end, you know, will be getting behind the dad in the dugout. And I just think the whole place is just will be given a massive lift because of that. And, I know you told me before about your goalkeeper, Kepa. I just wonder, you know, if he's been used to playing in this type of intense atmosphere before and how that may or may not affect him.
Mm. Well, he was all right at Valencia. That was pretty intense, wasn't it? Yeah. I think he's experienced for that. Was it that toxic then under Silva? I hadn't realised he was so hated, was it? Didn't think that he was any good, I suppose.
It wasn't the fact he was so hated, I don't think. And to be fair, the supporters kind of tried to keep their faith in Silva, you know, for maybe longer than he deserved. But the final sort of... The final tipping point was the home game against Norwich, who hadn't scored an away goal since this was their first away fixture of the season.
Yes.
And played just off the park and beat us 2-0. And at that stage, you know, I'd never been at an Everton stadium before, even under Sam Allardyce, where the crowd join in with the away fans singing Sacked in the Morning. It's the worst atmosphere and I've envisaged in all my time watching Everton.
But I think it's interesting that... you've got a fantastic record against us at Goodison Park. And last year, I remember, I think I was on the show before we played you, so I did a bit of research and I was listening to two guys on some sort of Everton TV thing, with two blokes on a couch, and they were sitting there going, ah, there's no way we're going to win tomorrow. We've been on a lousy run of form, and Chelsea are doing this, and Chelsea, I think we'd sort of just gone through to the semi-final of the Europa League. Mm-hmm. There's no way we're going to win. There's no way they're going to win. And you won 2-0.
We were rubbish too.
We were rubbish, but the bottom line is that Everton came in worse form than we were in.
That's correct, yes.
for some reason we seem to struggle at your place. I mean, we've had a couple of great victories, but I think in the main, you know, I don't know whether your point about the crowd, whether it's that or I don't know. I mean, and I suppose the players tomorrow are really going to be up for it because they're going to want to prove themselves if Dunk gets the gig till the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly got to be a factor in any player's minds in terms of, you know, what their potential future is at the club. But, I mean, for me tomorrow, the most intriguing aspect of it is what team Ferguson chooses to play and what tactics he chooses to deploy for that game. Because certainly, you know, as you saw from the bar for the Derby game on Wednesday night, tactically, Everton were almost a shambles on Wednesday evening. You know, the high line with the back three just didn't work. I'm sure Chelsea paid lots of attention to that and were trying to hit Everton, you know, with their controlled passing football and try to expose the defenders and get them one-on-one with Tammy Abraham in particular. So I think the tactics that Ferguson employs tomorrow are going to be crucial to whether the game turns in Everton's favour or not.
Paul, it's been great having you on, boss. Just before you go, a very quick score prediction.
Well, if you'd asked me after the Derby game, I probably would have predicted a 3-0 win for Chelsea, but filled with an unfounded sense of optimism. And given Chelsea haven't got the best record of goods in part in recent times, I'm going to think we might just sneak this one 2-1.
Lovely stuff. Paul, thank you very much for coming on. That was Paul McParland, senior writer and Everton correspondent at These Football Times. Well, there we go, gents. Good discussion, that, Chidge. I like your comparisons with the Chelsea legends. Please.
3-1.
3-1 to Chelsea tomorrow. Clayton?
1-0.
Oh, dear. 3-2. 3-2 to the Blues. Oh, they're both blue. Help. 3-2 to Everton. No, 3-2 to Chelsea.
At least you get goals. 6.7 shots on target away from home, by the way, this season. So there we go. That's the best record since Jose's first season.
Is it really? Wowzers.
Yes, indeed it is. This has been the Chelsea Fan Show. Brilliant as ever, fellas. Thoroughly enjoyed your company. We'll see you next Friday at 7 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.